Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name's Michelle Cachette. I'm your co-host today, and I'm sitting in the studio with Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hello, Michelle.
So most leaders want their businesses to succeed and to excel, right? Just that's not rocket science. That's what we want.
Right.
We want to be successful. And most leaders understand that the only way to accomplish that is to recruit high-quality employees. But the hiring process can be far more complicated than we think it is.
Absolutely. And I think especially small business people, but even people in corporations.
No, wait, hold on. Small business people? Like, are they small people?
Not tiny business people. I mean, just small business people. But seriously, regardless of the size of the organization you're in, it's very easy to kind of default to hiring people without a process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you meet somebody, you're kind of taken with them.
Mm-hmm.
You think they would be a fit, and you don't go through any kind of process, and that's how you get into trouble.
Or you just think you'd have fun together, which is really not the right way to
hire
people.
That's not the best way to do it either.
Absolutely true. So today we're going to break down the right way to hire someone so you can build the team you need. Because if you don't hire the right people, that creates a whole nother mess that we're actually going to talk about next week.
It can be very expensive.
It can be expensive. It can be time consuming.
Yep.
Just bad. So we want to actually make the right hiring decisions on the front end so we don't have to deal with any firings or anything else on the back end. And so this is why it's so critical. So today we're going to talk about we're going to give you guidelines that will help you with your own hiring practices, okay? But before we dive into the practicalities of the topic, I have to ask you, have you ever made a horrible hiring decision?
Oh, I've made some terrible hiring decisions through the years.
Not me, of course.
Not you, of course. No, that's one of the best decisions I ever made.
I just want to make that clear just before. No, go ahead.
No, I have. You know, I can think in one situation where I hired a young man that just was incredibly energetic. He seemed to be full of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being one of the worst hires of my career. And actually not because of him. Actually, because I didn't think through the fit very well. He was the right guy in the wrong job. And it didn't serve him. It didn't serve the organization. It ultimately didn't serve me. And it became very expensive to try to fix because I didn't feel good, given the fact that I'd made the mistake and put him into the wrong position of just, you know, letting him go and, you know, taking my lumps and going on. I felt like, you know, I owed him a significant severance and helping him getting replaced and in another job. And we didn't have anything that would fit him in the organization I was in when I hired him. So it just ended up being very time consuming, very expensive. And I could have avoided all that if I'd taken a little more time on the front end and been clear about a hiring process, which we're going to talk about.
You know, you make a very good point that you can have a great person who's not the right fit.
That's right.
So it's not just about finding a good person, because there's a lot of great people out there that would benefit many companies that will not be the right person for your team. And that's why this process is so critical, because you can sit down and interview somebody that seems so dynamic and it be so wrong for what you need.
That's right. You got to get very clear on that.
Okay. So I'm sure the wisdom that you're going to be sharing today is hard-earned because you've made, as you admitted,
made so many mistakes.
But that's okay. That's good because we get to benefit from that. And hopefully we get to avoid them. So let's start talking about those guidelines for hiring.
Where do you begin? I want to begin by saying that, you know, we kind of maybe over-advertise this with the title. You know, this isn't the right process. This is the process I use and the process that it's informed by a lot of mistakes, a lot of wisdom. A lot of what I've learned from really good HR people and recruitment people, but this is the process I currently use. And so I want to just kind of preface it with that. But for me, the first guideline is define the institutional culture you're trying to create, because what we sometimes fail to realize is that when we add people to our companies or to our ministry organizations or institution, whatever, we're going to alter the culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to either change the culture. We're going to reinforce a culture that already exists. And we got to be clear about what it is that we're trying to create. I think culture is one of the single most important components of effective organizations, organizations that really move the needle, that achieve significant outcomes. But largely, culture is kind of like the water is to fish. They're unaware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in every organization, there's a culture. And if you don't get very clear about what that culture is, you can really blow it by bringing in somebody to the culture that's just not a cultural fit. That's why most hires don't work. is it just wasn't a cultural fit to begin with. So, for example, in my own small company now, responsiveness is a huge core value for us. We want people that are responsive. One of the things that drives me crazy is sending somebody an email or a text message and then not hearing from them for, you know, sometimes days. That person is not going to work well in our culture because we're moving quickly. We're growing fast. We've grown 100% a year for the last 3 years. And people have got to be able to keep up. And it's a, you know, there's other slower cultures they can go into, and that's fine. Maybe they don't need to be that responsive. But in our culture, to succeed, you have to be responsive. It's an attribute of our culture.
And that's something you can gauge pretty quickly
in
the hiring process.
Yeah, I mean, just all the initial responses. One of the things I've also learned the hard way is that it doesn't usually get better after the hire.
No.
So it's a little bit like dating in that regard. You're usually going to see the best behavior before the knot's tied. You know, once you've gone to the altar and committed, then people have a way of sort of becoming who they really are. And so you got to pay a lot of attention in that courting phase to see what you're getting.
And even outside of any face-to-face interview, all the interactions matter.
Absolutely. And I would just also say, if you're an employee looking for a job, realize that everything communicates to that prospective employer about what you believe, how you are, how you're going to work out as an employee.
Okay, so that first guideline is to define the institutional culture you want to create. That's so critical that from the very beginning, before you even start talking to people, that you really want to identify what kind of culture you want in your organization.
That's right. Be clear on your core values is another way to say it.
All right. Number two, what is that second guideline?
Well, it's to determine what kind of employees you want to attract. And so I'm looking for certain attributes in the employees that I want to attract. And now I'm going beyond the issues of their skills. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. But I'm really talking about really their character. And I want to attract a certain kind of person. And the way I describe this is they're going to be humble, honest, hungry, and smart.
Okay.
And I'm looking for those things. I don't want people that are arrogant. I don't want people, obviously, that are dishonest. And so I'm going to ferret that out. I want to pay particular attention to what they put on their application. I'm going to check references, do all that. I want people that are hungry, that are curious, that are willing to learn, that want to grow, that want to develop, acquire new skills, and not people that think they've got it all and they show up and they're not willing to learn. I also want to hire smart people. You know, and so in various points in my career, when I was hiring people, I would literally do IQ tests. I've had them done on me. But just, you know, it's not always a conclusive thing. One of the best hires I ever made, the industrial psychologist that we were using said, I don't think you should hire this person because I don't think they're smart enough. And I said, I just think you're wrong. I mean, they may not have the kind of smarts that you can measure in this test, but they're street smart. And again, it was one of the best hires I ever made. So you have to use all this with a grain of salt, but still, I like to test for that and find out what their intellectual capabilities are. So humble, honest, hungry, and smart, part of what I'm looking for.
You know, and part of that process too is not just gauging if this person could be a fit, but it also helps set you up for what needs to happen if they're hired, you know, down the road. All this is information about the person that just gives you a head start on working together.
What kind of development needs are going to be? What kind of skills will I have to impart that they may not now have? But again, if they're humble, honest, hungry, and smart, we can convey a lot of that. It's the foundation. It's that character component that's so important.
All right. So define the institutional culture you want to create. Two, determine what kind of employees you want to attract. What is that third guideline for hiring?
Yeah, because you're going to have more attributes that you're going to want for specific jobs. But until you get clear on the job description, you really can't go further than this. And I've violated this concept in the past. Larger organizations typically don't let you violate it, but in small business where you're the sole proprietor,
you can kind of cheat.
So the thing about a written job description is that it clarifies the expectations for you and for the prospective employee and for the other people that are going to have a stake in it. So I like to get clear on the job description before there's anybody, you know, kind of in the mix, anybody that we're considering. What are the basic job requirements? What is this person going to be doing? If you're not clear on that, you're really not setting them up for success because you'll have no way to measure whether or not they're living up to their job or doing the job. If you're just hiring somebody to come in and just kind of shoulder the burden and you're not clear on this, you don't really have any objective basis for evaluating them.
Yes.
You don't have any way for them improving or growing, and they're not going to be satisfied as an employee because they don't know if they're doing the job or not. So again, a written job description. Written is also important. You know, you may say, well, I can describe what the job is. Again, written is so important. I really believe in this principle that thoughts disentangle themselves passing over the lips and through pencil tips. Mm-hmm. There's something that gives you clarity when you actually have to write it down. And I would tell people when I was in a larger corporation, if you can't give me a job description, we're not going anywhere past that. Mm-hmm. That's where it starts. And until you get clear on what you need, I'm not going to help you get what you say you need. So getting that job description, and, you know, I use templates for this, frankly, you know, where it's a very clear thing that says basically, here's the overall job description.
Yes.
And then here's what are the responsibilities or the duties, and literally itemize those or enumerate them. What's mm-hmm. the most important thing? Second one. And to come up with maybe 7 to 10 job responsibilities, then I go from that to qualifications and some other things. But it really starts with that job description.
So, you know, as you mentioned, it's so important to have that actually written down. So, but sometimes, let's say we meet somebody who is extremely dynamic and we would just love to have them on their team. And so then we go and try to create a job description that fits that person. You know, I hear of this happening quite often, seen it happen. What do you think about that? Does that ever work?
It does sometimes, actually. There are sometimes you'll encounter somebody. I don't think, by the way, it's charisma is the first thing you should be looking for. And that's how I describe what you shared. But I do think that there are times when you draft somebody and you can get away with this in a larger organization much easier than you can in a smaller organization. But somebody you're not quite clear how you're going to play them. You may have a job description, but it's just somebody that's just got some attributes that you know that they would be catalytic if you could bring them into the organization. But that's very, very rare. And again, I would force myself to create a job description, even if I was enamored with a specific person.
Okay.
Give them something to do. And I'll give you a concrete example. I hired a person in the corporate world just like this. He was incredibly dynamic.
Okay.
Very good communicator, well-known in my industry. And unfortunately, I really wasn't clear on the job description when I brought him in. And what happened was it set him up for conflict because mm-hmm. he didn't know if his job was this or that.
Okay.
And he ended up stepping into a lot of areas that really I didn't want him to.
Okay.
And overstepping his bounds. I mean, that was my fault because I didn't clearly define the bounds. But it threatened a lot of his peers.
Okay, yes.
And it ended up not working out. He was very dissatisfied because he didn't have a clear job description, even though he was very charismatic and had been very successful to that point. I definitely wasn't happy mm-hmm. with the hire. It unsettled my entire team. And it took us months to kind of come back from that.
So really that written job description, you know, if you don't know who you're hiring yet or you don't know who that person will be, it just really gives you some great guidelines for being able to kind of find the yep. right person. But on the back end, it creates accountability.
Yes.
So everybody's very clear. So there's no surprises and no crossing lines that the hire knows very clearly what they are all about, why they were
yes.
hired, and you know very clearly why you hired them. And if there's any disagreement or crossing of lines, you go right back to that document rather than trying to recollect the conversation.
And sometimes you can revise that document, but it becomes the foundation for an annual performance review or mm-hmm. a quarterly performance review, whatever the custom is in your organization.
You know, this is the third guideline that we're giving, but the reality is this is probably, I don't know if you would agree, the most important, but often that we skip over this because it's a task, it's a lot of work, you have to really spend
yeah.
time doing it, nobody wants to
And
create.
It feels like bureaucracy sometimes.
Yes.
Like, you know, HR is making me fill out this job description. I just need help. You know, I need two
yeah.
more hands in here.
Yes,
I need
exactly.
help because I'm drowning. But again, it's every time I tried to pass over this, I paid for it.
Mm-hmm. Every single time. All right. We have more guidelines to give you on how to hire the right person and have a process that's positive for the long term rather than something that ends up a mess. But we're going to take a break right now. Stick with us and we'll be right back.
As a busy and successful blogger, podcaster, author, speaker, and consultant, I'm constantly asked about the tools I use to get it all done. Now, for the first time, I'm going to pull back the curtain and let you peek inside my toolbox to see the software and hardware I use for everything from blogging and podcasting to productivity, social media, and speaking, plus so much more. You can't buy Inside My Toolbox, but you can get it for free by subscribing to my free email newsletter. When you subscribe, you'll receive my newest content right in your inbox. You'll never have to worry about missing an important post or update again. To get your free copy of the Inside My Toolbox ebook, visit michaelhyatt.com. and enter your name and email address into the form on the page. Don't waste any more time or money using the wrong tools. Sign up today at michaelhyatt.com.
On this episode of This Is Your Life, we're talking about an effective hiring practice, and we're giving you guidelines in order to make that happen. Because, you know, there's nothing worse than a bad hire. It just creates a nightmare for everybody. So in the first half of this episode, we went through the first three guidelines, which are define the institutional culture you want to create, determine what kind of employees you want to attract, and three, develop a written job description for the position you need to recruit. Now, before we move on to the fourth guideline, I do have to ask you, is it really necessary to develop that written job description if you are a small company of two or three people? I mean, like somebody like me who's self-employed, I have an assistant, I use subcontractors for most of my design work, but I may hire one more part-time employee, but I'm just a small company. Is it really necessary, or can we be a little more flexible?
No, I would say it's absolutely necessary. And it's important, again, for your own clarity and for the clarity of the person who's going to be fulfilling the job. How will they know if they're doing a good job unless there's some kind of benchmark they're being measured against? If you're just hiring somebody to come in and do everything, I mean, the job can never be completed. It can never be executed to your satisfaction. So this kind of clarity ultimately gets translated into job satisfaction and you being happy with the person you hired.
Okay, so whether it's your first employee or your 500th employee, this is absolutely part of, you have to have all of these different elements included. Okay, so number four, what's the fourth guideline?
The fourth one is to detail the necessary skills required for the job. Now, technically speaking, this is part of the job description. For me, it's the, you know, the second half of the job description where I'm going to put what skills they're going to have to succeed at the job. It may be as simple as they have to be familiar with something like Microsoft Excel.
Okay.
Or Microsoft Word.
Infusionsoft. And maybe you're hiring somebody that's
more
specific.
Technical.
Yeah, something very, very specific.
That's right. And so whatever's going to be required, whatever skills you want, get clear about them here. If they don't have one or two of the skills, you can talk about how they could pick those up or how you could give them the training or the development opportunities to gain those. But you've got to get clear on what they need. Now, I will tell you that this is a little bit dicey because people will tell you all kinds of things in job applications.
True. Do you ever test? Like if it was like...
Absolutely.
Like you test them on certain applications
absolutely.
Or typing or whatever it may be?
Definitely. If it's like an administrative assistant position, test them on those tools. And there are online ways to do that. Mm-hmm. There are, if you're hiring from an executive assistance company that does virtual assistants like EA Help, they will do that testing on your behalf and make sure that that person is qualified. But it's amazing how many people will claim on a job application, for example, software that they're familiar with, that maybe they've had one opportunity to use it, or they've loaded it on their computer one time. But there's a difference between having loaded Microsoft Excel and being, you know, a spreadsheet. Jockey.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those are two different things. And it brings up, and we don't really have a specific part to describe this, Michelle, but it really does talk about the importance or speak to the importance of checking references.
Okay, yes.
That to me is like the single most important thing that you could do when you're hiring somebody is check those references. Don't just take the person's word for it.
And we're not saying checking it, like read the application and see that it's included.
No.
And some people do that. They're like, well, if they listed these references, they must be good.
Yeah.
But
no,
they don't actually call them.
Like, I don't call them in the first round. I want to make sure that they've, and we'll talk about the kind of the process here in a minute. But once they're now into the qualifying round, you know, they're one of the final candidates, I'm going to make those phone calls myself and check those references and make sure that the person, you know, lives up to what they've claimed.
Okay.
Now, you got to be careful with that because in our current culture with so much litigation and people don't want to naturally say bad things about other people, I listen for enthusiasm. So I got a call the other day for somebody who had worked for me when I was at Thomas Nelson, and they wanted to know what kind of employee this was. And so I said, if you don't hire this person, you're an idiot. I don't think I was actually that crass, but I said something like I was super enthusiastic.
Yes.
Because the only reason this person moved was because their spouse took a job in another city and they had to move. I would have never wanted to lose this person, ever.
And you made that very clear.
And I made that very clear.
Versus just saying, yeah, they were a good employee.
Yeah, they were good. They met the requirements. I mean, if you don't hear that kind of enthusiasm, that's like negative reference.
Because people won't be blatantly negative on a reference nowadays. They just won't. Okay.
So you're looking for those people that are indispensable, that their previous employers can't believe they lost them, would do anything to get them back. And that's one of the questions I ask in references too. If you had the opportunity to hire this person back, would you? If they hesitate,
that's a good. Yeah, any hesitation is not a good sign. Okay, that's great. That fourth guideline is detail the necessary skills required for the job, which is part of your job description, but we just kind of expanded on that, how critical the reference piece really is to the whole process.
Yeah, and I would get very specific on this too. Again, it's going to be more important for technical jobs, like, again, at Thomas Nelson, where we would have people that were involved in Bible translation work. You know, they had to have working familiarity with the Greek language and with the Hebrew language, things like that. I mean, you want to get very specific about the requirements, about the skills.
All right. So what is the next guideline? This would be number five.
This is a huge, hugely powerful suggestion for entrepreneurs especially. And that is distribute the job description to your tribe. Now, here's what I do. This is the process I engage in right now. When I've got an open position, I do the job description, and then I post it as a page on my WordPress site.
Okay.
Then I go out into social media, and I say, hey, I'm looking to hire whatever it is, you know, administrative assistant, marketing director, Infusionsoft expert, whatever it is. And then I have a link back to that job description. And in the job description, I have a section at the very end called Next Steps. So in other words, if you're interested in this position, here's what you need to do next.
Okay.
Here's the cool thing about that. The people that are already in your tribe, if you've got a social media platform, these are people that already get you. They understand what you're about. They understand your message. They understand what you value, what's
priority to
you.
And there's some affinity there, too, because they're in a similar world and they're doing similar things.
You have to be a little bit careful because you don't just want sort of the gawking fans.
Yes, true.
You know? But having said that, when you get somebody that's familiar with your work and understands your values, this whole cultural fit idea that we started talking about is so important that if you can recruit from your own tribe, people that are already self-identified as members of your tribe, it dramatically improves the chances of this being a successful hire. So, for example, in my last hire, one of the last hires we did, which was a personal assistant for my wife, that's what we did.
Okay.
The person actually wasn't in my tribe, but somebody that was in my tribe referred that person and said, this person will be a perfect fit
for you.
Which
at times is as good, if not better.
Absolutely. They know what you're looking for.
Somebody mentioned that at the platform conference recently. I don't know if it was Stu McLaren or somebody else that they get a lot of recommendations, hiring recommendations, or people applying from their tribe. But what they have found is that those people end up being hired and great employees, and they end up then finding other people
That's
to join
right.
the organization as well. So it ends up being such a benefit down the road versus just immediately.
Well, typically speaking, great people have great friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll pull in other great candidates into the company. And that's how you build a great company.
That's great. Such good advice. All right. What is, after you distribute that job description to your tribe, what do you do finally?
I would have a clear multi-phase interviews process. And I used a big word here, delineate, because it started with a D and all the rest of it.
Yeah. Have you all noticed we've used all Ds? Define, determine, develop, detail, distribute, and delineate.
Delineate. That was a bit of a stretch.
This is free, everyone. This is just bonus extra content
alliteration
for free.
So delineate a multi-phase interview process. Here's what it doesn't look like in my organization or organizations I've led. You meet a great person, you offer them the job, they say yes, now you bring them in the company. No. I'm like the worst person, honestly, for evaluating. I get very caught up in people's personalities. I don't sometimes look at the details. It's just like the chemistry works. I'm bringing this person in. But I've learned through the years, because I've made a lot of bad hires doing that, that I need to have a multi-phase interview process, and I get very clear on paper what that's going to look like.
Okay.
So again, going back to hiring Gail's assistant, what we said was we did the job description. We posted on social media. People submitted a written application.
Okay.
My assistant, Trevinia, then looked at all the written applications. I think there were about 45 that we got.
Okay.
They said, which of them on paper meet the minimal qualifications? And then I think she might have ended up with 14 or 15 of those. Then she decided that she was going to interview, just a short Skype interview with each of those 15. Based on that, she narrowed the field down so that eventually she presented to Gail and to me three candidates.
Wow.
Now, in a larger organization or somebody that's going to be interacting with more people, this was Gail's personal assistant, so she's really going to just interact with me and with Gail. But in a large organization, you may want to have that person meet with several people in the company who see things from a different point of view than you see. Like my HR director, Jim Thomason, who was the HR director at Thomas Nelson, HR VP when I was there, he was like the total opposite from me. Like, I'm seeing the big picture. I'm looking for the inspiration, the magic. He's like, nuts and bolts. What are your qualifications? What's your educational background? Are you trained? Are you qualified? He's asking the tough questions. Now, is one more important than the other? No.
No, they're both important.
They're both important.
Which is really why you need to have that multi-phase process.
So I want the person that I'm ultimately going to hire, I want them to meet with every significant stakeholder in the company. And so that review process sometimes will take a couple of weeks. It will involve multiple interviews. I know Dave Ramsey does this at his organization too. People can't believe how many interviews are conducted before they get hired. But Dave says this, I don't know if it's original with him, but it's right. Hire slow, fire fast.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you won't have to do that many fires.
I agree with that.
I did too.
That's good advice too.
If you hire slow and really take your time on the front end.
So you said you can spend weeks. Is the the hiring interview process ever over months? Or is it typically do you try to keep it within?
Occasionally. Usually the interviewing process isn't over months, but the search process may be over months. So I can remember when we were looking for somebody to replace me at Thomas Nelson, I recommended to the board that it be Mark Schoenwald. He was the logical choice. I brought him into the company. I thought he was the guy. But the board felt like, in their fiduciary responsibility to the other investors, that they needed to conduct a nationwide search and go through the process. And Mark would be one of the candidates. And that process took months because there weren't that many people that would have the requirements to fit that slot as the CEO of a Christian publishing company. But we went through the process. The board finally came back around and chose Mark as my successor. It was absolutely the right decision. But that took months. And generally doesn't take that long. But I would say, and people that are listening to this may be executive recruiters and could tell us, but I would say expecting a couple of months is probably typical for a higher level position.
Okay.
I'm going to be looking for a CFO this next year, for example, in my business. And I expect that to be a 60 to 90 day process. Again,
not
the interview,
not gonna be,
but the search.
But the search and kind of honing in on the right set of candidates. All right. Now, are there any differences in the hiring process between, are there any differences in the hiring process between a corporate situation versus a small business situation? And what are those differences?
Well, there are probably more compliance issues in a bigger corporation. But beyond that, I don't know that there's that much difference.
Okay. You just might have more team members to, you know, in that multi-phase process, there may be more people to introduce that potential hire to and things like that. But it's just scaled differently.
That's
it's scaled bigger, but it's the same process.
Larger organizations out of legal necessity will probably be more disciplined and rigorous about the process. But small businesses should do that as well. There's more at stake.
Yes.
You know, you bring in one person into a four-person company. That's pretty significant.
It is.
That's a lot different than bringing one person into a 650-person organization. So you got to be even more careful.
That's very interesting, because if you bring in the wrong person to a four-person organization, that has huge detrimental effects.
You could destroy the corporation.
Yes.
Or the company.
You bring in one bad hire into a company of 1,000, that might be able to be absorbed a little bit easier depending on the position.
Yeah. You can recover from it more easily. By the way, one of the things I didn't mention in the multi-phase interview process, but the last phase for me is I may not be the last person that interviews them. I definitely want to be part of the process, obviously, if they're going to report to me. But one of the last things I do before I actually offer the job is I want to go out to dinner with that person and their spouse.
That would give you a whole different perspective.
Well, it gives me an opportunity to include Gail because she's going to see things that I don't see. I can think of one situation where a person made it all the way through the process. Everybody was on board that we needed to hire this person. I had the offer framed up. I literally had a printed offer in my jacket that I was going to present to this person at dinner. And this was just kind of because I have this practice, it was almost perfunctory. So Gail and I went out to dinner with this person and their spouse. And when we saw them relate to one another.
Not good.
It revealed some stuff to us that made me really nervous about offering, in this case, this man.
Were they not kind to each other in how they interacted?
No, he was very, he snapped at his wife.
Really? At dinner in front of you?
Yeah.
Very, that says something.
Very inconsiderate. I could tell they just didn't have a good relationship.
Uh-huh.
Now, people say, well, what does that have to do with work? Well, as it turns out, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's trouble at home, it's eventually going to show up.
True.
In the workplace. I don't expect a perfect relationship. Gail and I don't have a perfect relationship.
But if they're going out with their potential future boss and his wife, and that's coming up, again, like you said just a few moments ago, we're going to show our best selves in the interview process.
That's right.
So if that's coming out during that phase of the process, then that is a red flag.
Well, it showed me how he treats the people that are closest to him. Because if his spouse was one of the people that is in his inside circle closest to him, and he treats her with what I thought was disrespect, then I thought, I don't want the people that will be working for him treated like that.
Yes.
And not that she was inferior and he was the superior at all. I'm just saying that if he didn't have the common courtesy and he wasn't able to regulate that in a pretty high-pressure situation, what's he going to do when the pressure's off and he's relating to people that aren't as close as his wife? So it was just a huge red flag. Gail literally kicked me under the table. She never does
really?
That, but she literally kicked me under the table.
Because she was sensing it right away,
yeah.
I bet.
And I knew exactly that kick meant, don't you even think about hiring this guy or offering the job, because this isn't going to work.
And that offer stayed right in your jacket pocket, I'm guessing.
That's right. I didn't hire him. And the funny thing about it was, after I didn't hire him, I had all kinds of people come forward who had known him, who wouldn't tell me in the interview process.
Really?
But now that I made the, quote, right decision, they said, we're really glad you didn't hire him. Now, these weren't people that were working for me, but people that we had checked in the industry said, I really couldn't say that, or I didn't feel at liberty to say it, but we're really glad you didn't hire him.
Oh, that hiring process is so critical. And I'll just add here at the end of this episode, let's say you follow all these guidelines, you do it absolutely right by the book, and a couple months into the new hire, you realize, uh-oh. Yeah, and that does happen sometimes.
It does.
I mean, doing this process will certainly eliminate the vast majority of those kind of getting yourself in those bad situations. But sometimes it does happen. The person isn't the right fit or whatever it may be. And the good news is we have another episode coming next week on how to fire.
That's right. If you don't do this work and you find yourself in that situation, we'll tell you how to get out of it.
Absolutely. Well, if you enjoyed today's conversation, you can get all the show notes and a full transcript of the entire episode at michaelhyatt.com. In addition, if you would prefer to watch rather than just listen, the video is available at michaelhyatt.com as well. And I would love for you to do a huge favor for us. If you could, please head over to iTunes and rate the program. Honestly, this is so key and really helps get the content into the hands of people that truly need it. And we would be so grateful. Well, any final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I would just encourage people listening to be thoughtful about the process. Maybe it's time to re-engineer that process or to give it another look and come up with a very specific process that you're going to employ in order to guarantee that you attract the very best talent to your company, because the future of your company depends on it.
So true. Well, thank you again for being with us today. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters.